So Chris, 2 weeks ago now, the San Diego Padres signed their shortstop, Fernando Tatis Jr., to the longest deal in baseball history, 14 years, $340 million, which is also the richest contract in Padres history. What were your thoughts when you heard about these contractual records being broken?
Well, my first thought was that he and the Padres talked about it being a statue contract, that his hope is that someday there'll be a statue outside Petco where he stands alongside the late Tony Gwynn and Trevor Hoffman, who currently have statues.
Chris Connolly is a reporter for ESPN.
But what I really thought was, as great as this contract is, it's still not the most significant or the longest contract in the history of the Padres franchise. Because the most important contract, in a sense, signed this offseason was signed by a player that most people have probably never heard of. And his name is Matt LaChapa. You think about a business like Major League Baseball, where loyalty is put to the test and there's free agency and the negotiations are so ruthless. Amid all that, the story of Matt LaChapa is a really different kind of baseball story. I hope Tatis gets that statue someday. But even if he signs another contract that's just as long as the one he just signed, it won't be as long as the commitment that the Padres have made to Matt LaChapa. And his story is a remarkable one.
Nearly 30 years ago, the San Diego Padres signed a dream prospect, a local kid, a dominating lefty with an A-plus curveball and a slick move to first base. His name was Matt LaChapa. A lot has changed over the last three decades, but the story of Matt LaChapa and the Padres has endured. Today, a baseball story unlike any other, and one I promise you won't soon forget. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, March 5th. This is ESPN Daily. Chris Connolly, thank you so much for joining us on ESPN Daily again.
Thanks for having me.
So we're talking in March now. Spring training is underway. Everybody is getting excited about baseball being back and all of the warmth, the senses that stuff entails. But there's also a certain coldness to this time of year, Chris, because now is also when teams are signing and trading and cutting players, and the very brutal reality of baseball as a business is also underway. You reported a story for E60 a few years ago on a player in the Padres organization, a pitcher named Matt LaChapa, whose name actually comes up every year around this time. And he is not the type of player people know about, no. But he is the longest tenured guy in the entire organization. So where and when does Matt LaChapa's story begin?
I guess you'd have to go back some 45 years. I think you're going back to June 29th, 1975. That's when Matt LaChapa was born. It really begins on the Barona Indian Reservation, which is some 5,000 acres of land that's 30 miles east of San Diego. And that's been the tribe's home since 1932, where it's got some 500 self-governed Mission Indians living there. According to his family, you know, this beautiful and unspoiled place in many respects was a hard place in which to live. Clifford LaChapa is Matt LaChapa's father, and he was the tribe's chairman. And in 1975, when Matt was born, he says that unemployment was very high on the reservation, as high as 75%. He says that a lot of people back then were on welfare. It was a difficult time for the tribe. But he instilled in his children the desire to succeed.
We put in him, you got to be proud of who you are. I said, just because your dad's the chairman, you're not going to get things given to you. You got to work for it.
you arrived at the reservation and you got to speak with the LaChapa family, and they still live on the reservation to this day. What do they have to say about Matt's childhood? What was life like growing up on the reservation?
The place we did some of the interviews were some very nice homes. And I asked, is this the kind of place where Matt grew up? And his father said, oh, no. And his brother Eagle said, our house was, well, they call it a hut home. He said, very small. But they would play a lot. And one of the things they loved to play was wiffle ball or just hitting rocks. And Matt, from the very beginning, was super competitive and did not want to lose at anything he did. So out of this super competitive nature came a desire to excel in sports. And pretty soon, baseball became his passion.
Chris, what was Matt LaChapa like as a baseball player?
Well, he became kind of a local legend thanks to some of the exploits he displayed at El Capitan High School.
He just dominated. It was almost an honor for the other team to be struck out by Matthew LaChapa.
He was just a dominant left-handed pitcher, just a strikeout king. One scout we talked to said Matt had two curveballs.
One that I used to call a just get me over curveball, and then he had the hammer that was really the strikeout pitch.
And so all of a sudden, all these guys with their radar guns start turning up to Matt's high school games. And he was unquestionably a dominant pitcher. And it was clear he was marked for something special.
What did Matt's family say about how he was handling all of the attention?
He was kind of unfazed by it. He wanted to do well outside the reservation, but he also wanted to stay humble. So amid all the craziness, it didn't seem to spin his head that much. And he was very proud of what he was doing, not just for himself, but for his family.
So Matt graduates from high school in 1993. He's preparing to enter the MLB draft that season. What happened?
On June 3rd, 1993, the date of the MLB draft, all of his friends and family gather at his high school ball field. Like they just come to the field to be together for this moment when they hope that Matt will be drafted. And so it's an anxious and exciting time, and they're kind of pacing around, and it's this beautiful kind of old high school field. And then finally the call comes in. Matt picks his phone up.
It's like a typical kid smiling and grinning ear to ear. Yes? Yes? Okay. Thank you.
And his father goes over and he goes, what is it, Matt?
What was it, man? I just got drafted by the Padres. Yeah.
Matt goes, I just got drafted by the Padres. His hometown team had taken him with the 56th pick in the draft. It was the happiest of all possible outcomes.
So a few weeks after he gets the call that changes his life, Matt and his family, they travel to San Diego. They leave the reservation. They go and sign his contract. Who did they meet there?
Well, we spoke with Priscilla Oppenheimer, who was the Padres farm director back then. And she had signed so many prospects in those days and certainly was no stranger to the signing ceremonies. She said she'd never seen anything like it.
They were coming into the office. So I set up the conference room and everything, and oh my God, here comes the whole tribe, you know, coming down the hall.
So there, in the presence of his family and friends, and Priscilla Oppenheimer of the San Diego Padres, Matt LaChapa signed his first contract with the Padres at the outset of what looked to be a most promising career. It was a thrilling moment, not just for him and for his family, but for Priscilla Oppenheimer to see all the excitement and anticipation that went into that moment. It was something that she never forgot. And what happened that day was Matt's mother, Linda LaChapa, taking her aside amid all the excitement and enthusiasm of the signing. And Linda LaChapa looks at Priscilla and says to her,
I want you to take care of him. And I said, don't worry, I will.
I want you to take care of him. Don't worry, I will. And that exchange would always remain in the minds of the people who were part of it.
Before Matt could play in the big leagues, Chris, he ends up first in the Arizona Rookie League. And in 95, he goes up to the Class A Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, who they're located about 200 miles north of the Barona Reservation. How was Matt performing as a player at this time?
So in 1995, Matt won 11 games for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, and he was looking forward to an even bigger year in 1996. He was training hard, training harder than he'd ever trained before. In fact, he would go to Qualcomm Stadium and run up and down the stairs just to get in shape. And Tony Gwynn, the Padres legend, would see him training like that, and he started calling him all business Matt LaChapa. He wasn't messing around. He wanted to be great and thought that 96 could be a big year for him.
So the start of that next season, it is April 6th, 1996. It is now the home opener for the Quakes, and Matt is 20 years old. His tribe, as they are wont to do, more than 30 of them, Chris, they travel up to see the game. What happens?
Well, he's not even supposed to pitch that night. He'd actually told his family, it's unlikely that I'll be pitching. But by the third inning of the game, the Quakes pitchers had given up 5 runs already. And with his team batting in the bottom of the fourth, Matt started to warm up in the bullpen, which was alongside the third baseline. And that happened to be right where his friends and family were sitting. Clifford, his father, immediately notices that Matt's warming up, and his first thought is, well, this is great. That means this isn't a wasted trip.
What happens next?
Suddenly, his family notices there's some commotion. Nobody can quite see what's happening. Now a big crowd is gathering near the railing. His brother Eagle makes it to the railing at his mother's urging. And that's when he sees his brother for the first time.
I looked over the rail. He was just laying flat. Laying flat on his back.
We'll be right back.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Chris, it's April 6th, 1996. It's the home opener for the Class A Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. And Matt LaChapa, who is their star left-handed pitcher, he was warming up in the bullpen, and now he's collapsed, with Matt's family there witnessing the scene. How did they describe the scene to you?
It's one of shock and horror for them. It seems to have come like a bolt of lightning from the blue. He's lying there and he's not responsive. Clifford, his father, remembers him being shocked.
They shocked him and his eyes didn't even move. And I looked real good at him again. His mom was there. Trying to talk to him and, Matt. Are you okay? And then I seen him shock him again, and right then I knew he's gone.
It's just beyond imagining. He seems to have slipped away for reasons that nobody can possibly understand. After a bit of a delay, there is an ambulance that comes out of the field and drives him to the hospital. Once the family gets to the hospital, they're eventually told that Matt has gone without oxygen in his brain for 2 minutes and that his outlook appears to not be very good at all.
What was Matt's diagnosis as they understood it?
They said he had gone into cardiac arrest. At the hospital, he was diagnosed with viral cardiomyopathy and that his weakened heart was unable to pump blood, which, as you might imagine, is a condition that is not often found in elite 20-year-old pitchers. Mm. And it was shocking to the Padres organization, no less than it was to the family, because Priscilla Oppenheimer had made sure that electrocardiograms had been done on everybody at spring training. It wasn't supposed to happen. But now, Matt LaChapa, 20 years old, was in a coma, and there was no telling when he might come out of it.
So he has this viral infection of his heart. What were the next steps for doctors?
Doctors gave him medication to try to strengthen his heart. The challenge was, as they relayed to the family, that the brain damage he'd suffered as a result of not having oxygen to his brain was irreversible. And yet, the family never gave up hope. And in the footage from that time, you can see family members around his bed in the hospital, touching him, speaking to him, singing to him, praying for him.
I love you, Matt. I pray for you every night.
Somebody from the family was there 24 hours a day, trying to will Matt back from the brink somehow. In the fall of 1996, he finally was brought home to the reservation. And that's where he's been ever since.
Chris, you had the chance to meet with Matt LaChapa, and you spoke to him in 2018 when you were reporting this piece. Matt was 42 years old at that time. It had been 22 years since he had collapsed on the field. When you sat down with him 3 years ago now, how is Matt doing?
It's self-evident that Matt LaChapa certainly has limited ability to communicate and limited ability for movement. He's woken up in the morning and given a shower. His family will feed him breakfast.
What do we need today? Potatoes and eggs? Huh? Does that sound good? All right.
He uses a wheelchair to get from his bed to the table. He has only a short-term memory, it seems like, for the most part. He won't remember what he's had for breakfast, is what Eagle, his brother, told us. It's obviously been a devastating thing that his body has been through. And yet, despite everything that he's had to endure, he has this amazing smile. He can convey things like, I love you and thank you.
Matt, how are you?
And he has this bone-crushing hug that members of his family all comment on as being a really life-affirming thing.
Over the last two decades, Chris, Matt's medical condition has not changed. What's his day-to-day life like?
Well, he's looked after. There's a feeding tube to help him, consume food. He also gets food, made for him by his family and by people who come in to help. There's a regular battery of doctor's visits and daily medicines. There are muscle relaxers to check his spasms. There's a beta blocker that's trying to prevent abnormal heart rhythms. There's all sorts of new supplies of medical stuff. There's a lot of treatment and looking after him that goes on. And the family plays a huge role in that. But it's also a very, there's a lot of expensive stuff that goes into taking care of Matt LaChapa.
All of the medical care that you've described, the cost of it, it reaches into the millions of dollars. How is the LaChapa family able to afford all of it?
The truth is, they wouldn't be able to. I don't think any family would be able to pay all the money that Matt LaChapa's care has cost over the years. So it all goes back to that conversation that was held on the day that he signed with the Padres organization, the conversation his late mother had with Priscilla Oppenheimer.
His mom said to me that day, "I want you to take care of him." And I said, "Don't worry, I will."
In Priscilla's remembrance, she's the first mother who ever said to me, "You take care of my son." And she and the Padres proved they would live up to that promise. Because Matt LaChapa has been under contract to the Padres organization all this time. Every year at this time, in February, a contract is sent out from the Padres offices to Matt LaChapa. Matt LaChapa then signs his contract. And what that means is that not only is he part of the Padres organization, he's also on the insurance. And the insurance has helped to pay for all the expensive care that Matt LaChapa has received these many years.
So Matt LaChapa has not played baseball in a quarter century at this point, but he is the longest tenured Padre, Chris, in the organization. Longer than luminaries and Hall of Famers like Trevor Hoffman, longer than Tony Gwynn, the late great Tony Gwynn. How has the family reacted to this act of kindness from the organization?
I would say that the family's gratitude is boundless. His brother Eagle said,
"They said that he's going to be a Padre for life, and we're very thankful to the Padres for that. It was great for all of us up here in Barona and in our family."
His father Clifford said, "They stepped up to the plate. It's unbelievable. It's not a kind of story you hear a lot about relation between a team and a player."
No.
This is a special story. Matt LaChapa's a special guy. And through lots of personnel changes and at least three different owners, this deal has remained intact. Matt LaChapa is a Padre for life. He's part of the franchise and will be forever.
You were also able to ask Matt himself what he thought of the Padres making him this member, this player for life. What did he say?
Well, I asked him,
"What if you're going to say something to the Padres and the fact that the team thinks that you're one of them for life? What would you say to the Padres?"
And he said,
Thank you.
And he hit me with that radiant smile of his.
Chris, what do you take away from the story of Matt LaChapa as Matt now is 45 years old?
It's quite a story, the Matt LaChapa story. I was there at Petco one day when Matt and his family came out onto the field, and somebody brought Matt to the mound. And it was a moment that couldn't help but touch you. It should have happened a different way, but to see him on the field receiving the affection from the Padres players, from his family and friends.
Matt, take care, buddy. Great seeing you again.
It was a lovely thing. I remember asking his father, I said, "Is Matt's story a happy story or a sad story?" And Matt's father said, "It's a beautiful story."
Chris Connolly, thank you for telling us the story of the most unique and special contract that I can imagine.
Thank you, Pablo.
Coming up, an inside look at the NBA All-Star Weekend.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. With apologies to New Year's and July 4th and every one of my family members' birthdays, my favorite social event of the entire year is NBA All-Star Weekend. Now, on television, All-Star Weekend is the dunk contest and the three-point shootout and that skills challenge thing and the best athletes on the planet not playing any defense while also, for some reason, Kevin Hart is there. But in person, especially if you know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, it's amazingly and overwhelmingly social. Michael Jordan always hosts his birthday party that I'm not invited to, but I hear about from Mike Wilbon. LeBron always has his thing. Charles Barkley's roaming around. One year in New Orleans, I remember boarding a bus to an undisclosed location and finding myself in the bayou wearing dried out contact lenses near Tracy McGrady while Dave Chappelle did 0 minutes of stand-up and a lot of Radiohead karaoke with a live band. All of which kind of gets at why this All-Star Weekend in Atlanta is so deeply unappealing to so many people involved. As LeBron himself recently explained.
I have zero energy and zero excitement about an All-Star game this year. I don't even understand why we're having an All-Star game. You know, we're also still dealing with a pandemic. We're still dealing with everything that's been going on. And we're going to bring the whole league into one city that's open. Obviously, you guys can see I'm not very happy about it, but it's out of my hands. And, I'll be there if I'm selected. But I'll be there physically, but not mentally.
Now, the biggest reason this weekend is still happening, despite the raging pandemic, is the NBA's TV deal. An All-Star broadcast means more money for the league's media partners, in this case, Turner. And in fairness to the NBA, the league isn't doing any publicly accessible events in Atlanta, and fan attendance is extremely limited, and the mayor of Atlanta herself is, quote, strongly encouraging promoters, clubs, bars, etc., not to host events in the city related to this game, end quote. And on that front, good luck, I guess. I can imagine the NBA people all abiding by NBA protocol, which means they're checking into their hotel by 7 p.m. Saturday and locking down until the game Sunday. But you can already find flyers for dozens upon dozens of independently run, publicly accessible, seemingly indoor parties with all the usual promised cameos from big-name musicians. It's kind of terrifying, honestly. But it's also fully unsurprising. I mean, back in 2016, in Toronto, dozens upon dozens of maniacs were lining up outside places in minus 20 degree weather. I was one of them. It was great. And so, look, I get it. But this weekend, a lot more of us should just be doing exactly what LeBron would clearly rather do. And just be staying home. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week, Jennifer Carson Strauss, Andre Soto, Sania Blue, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Ogilo. I'll talk to you Monday.